This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. It's time for our monthly wrap-up of environmental-related news with Wong Siew Lin and Lau Yao Hua, the co-founders, co-editors and writers from online journalism portal Makaranga. So today we've got pledges on our mind. First, Malaysia's pledge at COP26 to stop deforestation by 2030, and also what Malaysia has agreed to by signing the Global Methane Pledge along with 103 other countries. What does it all mean? We're going to find out. And we're also going to take a look at carbon credits and try to figure out how this form of trading works. And there's something happening over in Sabah, which we're going to find out a bit more. Welcome, both of you. How are you today?
Fine. I'm good. Thanks.
Thanks so much for joining me. So, wow, guys, end of the year already. My goodness, it's November. And I think the biggest news, if dare I say, was COP26, right, when we talk about the environment in November. So we know that Malaysia signed a pledge to stop deforestation by 2030. Is that possible? Is it a no deforestation thing? You know, can you help explain what it's all about?
Well, I think the quick answer to that question is yes, of course, we can do it by 2030. In fact, I think we can even do it now if we want. Which is really the point here that I want to make about this. It's like, you know, what the larger public might think about deforestation is actually, it could be quite different from what the official definition of, you know, deforestation is. So if we just backtrack a bit, you know, so this pledge that, you know, more than 140 countries have signed, you know, that endorsed this declaration at the recent COP26 at Glasgow, it's called the Glasgow Leaders Declaration on Forest and Land Use. It says that, you know, the wording of the declaration says that the countries commit to working together, right, to halt and reverse forest loss and land degradation by 2030. Right, so a lot of that is the gist of the declaration is on restoring degraded lands, degraded forest lands, and also supporting the indigenous communities. Mm. And so at first glance, so this, I think it's of course overall is a good step, right, rather than a step backwards, of course.
Yeah.
But of course, the document itself isn't legally binding. Yeah. Mm. So it's like, oh, we all sign and commit to it, but, you know, I guess even when they sign, maybe they have different thoughts about it. But the thing here is when we talk about forest loss, the official definition for many of the countries, including Malaysia, is the purpose of the land use, right? That land, is it used for forest or is it officially classified as forest? Now, we know in Malaysia, we have, you know, throughout Malaysia now, we have about 54 or 53% forest. But we also know very well that if you look for it, at it from the satellite, not all of those forests would be what you imagine a forest to be, mm-hmm. right? And so they can develop that land into, say, they can clear it and convert it into forest plantation. So from a very diverse forest, natural forest, they can clear it all and then plant just one species, for example, rubber trees for timber or eucalyptus for timber, and it will still be a forest. Mm. So they can do all of that. Technically, they can do that to all 53% and you will still have zero deforestation.
That's right.
Right? Because mm-hmm. it has not changed. So that's one thing that, you know, I think the larger public has to really be aware of. So already now, you know, in the past few years, every year, Malaysia has been clearing 20 to 32,000 hectares a year to convert natural forests into plantations, into monoculture timber plantations. Mm. Yeah, so, yeah, if you want to do that, if you don't have to wait to 2030, we can actually do it right now, I think, if you want to. So you just need to understand that although the pledge is overall a good step in the right direction, it is not legally binding. It might not be what we really want it to be or imagine it to be. And even at the time when we have achieved the target, we might still be looking at a lot less of the natural biodiverse forests that we think of when we think of Taman Negara.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's it. However, a really good thing here, I think, is if they do it, then it would mean that every time they degazette a forest reserve or a forest, they will have to do an immediate simultaneous replacement with another forest land.
Okay.
Right, then only they can reach no deforestation. Okay. I think, of course, that's something that we are also striving for.
Okay. All right. So I guess, you know, the thing is here to go beyond the headlines, isn't it? It looked really, really great, but there is a lot behind it, actually, you know, these sorts of pledges and the fine print, I suppose, yeah, that we really need to study and keep our leaders accountable for. Just moving on, though, there was another pledge, of course. Malaysia joined 103 other countries in the Global Methane Pledge. I've never even heard of this, guys. What is this about?
Well, yeah, what is methane? I mean, you know, the whole thing has always been GHG, greenhouse gases. Mm. And I think maybe it's just so confusing, right? So, but a lot of the focus actually has been on carbon dioxide, right? So methane is actually part of this conglomerate or this mixture of greenhouse gases that is actually warming the earth. So the idea, this was mooted actually by the EU and the US together, right? And so they want to try, why are they targeting methane and why has Malaysia signed up to this pledge, right? There were several other pledges at COP26 and Malaysia didn't sign up for all of them. So why this particular one, right? So basically methane only exists at about 2 parts per million in the atmosphere, whereas carbon dioxide exists in roughly 400 parts per million, okay? Mm-hmm. So it's so little. So why are we targeting it? Well, apparently it traps as much as, and this is where the figures are a little bit, you know, I'm not quite sure. So I'm just going to say roughly 30 to 80 times more heat, you know, than carbon dioxide. So it's actually more lethal, even though it exists in smaller amounts, right? Yeah. But it dissipates, okay? Although it might take about 10 years to dissipate, whereas carbon dioxide kind of, you know, hangs around kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And also for such a small amount of greenhouse gas, methane contributes to about a quarter to half of the warming that is happening now, okay? So you can do many things. You can remove it by converting it to carbon dioxide. Is that, you know, jumping from the frying pan to the fire? I'm not sure. But anyway, there's something that you can do about it because it's so lethal, all right? Mm-hmm. So basically, in Malaysia, so I looked up what are the sources of methane. There are three kind of key sources. One is, of course, oil and gas. So it's fossil fuels, again, just like with carbon dioxide. If you target the oil and gas sector, they also release a lot of methane, right? Mm-hmm. So basically, Petronas, apparently, according to the DG of CASA, of the ministry involved, Petronas is apparently engaging with the government to operationalize the pledge, okay, together with ASEAN, okay. Right? But if you want to look at the oil and gas sector, including Petronas, methane is emitted all along its chain, from production to processing, distribution, and of course, there's what they call fugitive emissions. You know, methane actually escapes along the way, all along the chain, right? So a very sort of low-hanging fruit could be that you just tackle the flaring of oil and gas plants, mm-hmm. right? When they burn, when they process fossil fuels, they have to flare it, and then that's where a lot of the methane comes out, right? Mm-hmm. But Petronas, I looked at their sustainability report. They're looking at different ways of tackling GHG, greenhouse gases, as a whole, and it would be looking at energy efficiency, carbon capture, which is something a little bit controversial, but also they have also said we're going to reduce flaring, and then they're also going to use renewable electricity. So that's very interesting. So that's the main source of methane in Malaysia. But there are two other sources. One is from the palm oil industry. So you have what they call the effluent that comes out from mill for processing of palm oil, right? Yeah. And it's already been happening. It's basically to capture this methane that comes out from, you know, this oil mill, palm oil mills. It has already been happening for years, actually, in a very small number of mills. And what they do is then they allow an estate to become self-sufficient because they power the electricity in the estate. So, you know, you get off the grid, which can be very interesting if you're very far away from the electrical grid. Then you can actually have your own, generating your own electricity. Then you have this closed loop thing and all that. So all very good, right? Now, MPUB, the Malaysian Palm Oil Board, is imposing the mandatory installations of what they call the biogas trapping. This is one of the ways to use up this methane that is escaping. Okay. And they're using it, they say it's a condition for any new mills that are being built have to have a biogas trapping or methane avoidance facility, which is good, yeah? But then there are also a lot of mills that are in existence at the moment. So perhaps something would be happening there again, right? Money, funding. So here's funding, build your biogas facility, power your own estate at the minimum kind of thing, yeah? Mm-hmm. And the last thing I want to talk about is where methane comes from is solid waste. So currently, you know, landfills are a big source of methane again, right? And again, a solution would be to convert it into biogas. similar to the palm oil mills. Just build a biogas facility, capture that, and again, you have a closed-loop system.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So it does sound really quite promising, actually. It's just that I guess we don't know too much about it at the moment, so we really need to keep an eye on that one. Yeah? Okay.
Yep.
All right. And just to quickly move on, I think the other big thing that we were hearing a lot about in COP26 was, of course, trading of carbon credits, right? Maybe, I don't know, it's happening a lot. I don't think people actually understand what it is all about. Maybe you guys can help explain what you guys know about it.
Well, we can't.
There goes all my hope.
That's the point we want to raise, I think. So although, we are both environmental journalists, right? But there are so many things we do not know about that we don't have a really good grasp on. And that includes carbon trading, carbon credits. And it's also something that we must keep an eye on because it is definitely coming fast and furious, right? We have all these talks either in the open or behind the scenes and lots of money involved, lots of stakeholders involved. And the process is very complex, right? Basically, it's many countries have pledged to achieve net zero carbon emission by 2050 or sometime around that, so including Malaysia. So then a lot of that is achieved by, I would emit carbon, but then I would, offset that emission by buying so-called carbon credits from other parties that are growing forests or keeping their forests, right, that absorb carbon. So that's where all the carbon credit and the trading comes in. So it's very complex for sure. It involves legislation, politics, finances, science, social science and all of that. And we, I mean, Cillian and I definitely don't really understand a lot of the dynamics. But what we know is that it's happening. Like we personally have, just in the past 2 months, I've seen planters talk to me about, they want the timber, but they're also eyeing this carbon credit in the future. Mm. So these are planters who are just going into planting forest plantations. They are looking at it already, although they themselves don't really understand it either, but there's the money there. And then we have been approached by consultants who ask us to advise them on such services. And I'm like, oh, I can't really help you. But so there are all these things, so we know that it's happening. And but there's a problem, right? When so much of it we do not understand. I don't just mean the journalists. I'm quite sure the larger public understands, quite little of it, right? Yeah. And the process is kind of obscure and it's not well communicated to many of the stakeholders. It can be problematic. Like, for example, earlier this month, Monger Bay has, they released the story, right, that sort of exposes this, reportedly also preliminary agreement happening in Sabah between the Sabah government and foreign stakeholders to sort of like manage and conserve 2 million hectares of land for carbon trading for the next century or two, right? Of course, on the paper, it sounds great. They're conserving such a large amount of land. But the problem is when it's kind of obscure and many of the stakeholders involved, the local stakeholders, they do not know about it. So I think that can be problematic. A bit, of course, this is all preliminary discussion, they say. So, but that definitely sets the scene that for potential, I guess, conflict in the future. And it definitely highlights and flags the need for us to really understand it a lot more. I think definitely whoever are really expert in this and the government authorities really have to do a much more proactive job to communicate it to the rest of us, educate the journalist.
Yeah, I think it's impending. Bursa Malaysia is already starting a voluntary carbon market. Right? Mm. If they come up with a tender notice for it, so it's voluntary, but what does it mean? So even if you're a business or you're in finance, it's like, what does the whole thing mean? And it raises the other thing about the ethics of basically monetizing nature, and of course, the whole argument about offsets. Like, so does this give you permission to pollute? Like, if Petronas gets involved in this, I'm not saying Petronas is going to, I don't know how they're going to approach this, but obviously, if it's a voluntary domestic market, our main oil and gas company has to be involved in it, right? Yeah. So what does that mean? Are you buying credit so that you can continue polluting? That's the other thing, it does raise all these ethical issues, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, that's something. I interviewed Meenakshi Raman, who's the president of Sabah Ala Malaysia, and she's very critical of this, you know, and she continues to say that all of this is a lot of greenwashing. It's, what is it, like, you know, developed countries continue to pollute and then just pay off developing countries. So there's so much more that needs explanation and like, how much value do you put on it, right? Who decides what that value is and all of that? There's so many things that, are very, very unclear to everybody at the moment. So, yeah, we need to keep making noise about that. But I'm afraid we're running out of time. But thank you so much, both of you, for joining me today. And, you know, for more information, of course, or to read any of the articles that you guys do, everyone just needs to head to makaranga.org. And if you miss any part of today's interview, just head to bfm.my/earth or download the podcast on the BFM app. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.